When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleOmics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand from Buffalo, New York. I have returned from Cleveland, Ohio. It is August the 5th, Monday, not Sunday. This is a special edition, preempted, so please exclude today's rating from the normal charts to exclude any outliers from future YouTube views analysis. Today on the program, we will discuss SummerSlam, mostly, and we'll go through TV ratings and attendance for WWE and AEW, an update on where they are, Nielsen TV ratings and attendance via WrestleTix estimates of tickets distributed. And we will discuss news and other events coming out of the press conference, what we learned, directly or indirectly. But first, we will begin with, why not, the attendance for SummerSlam at Cleveland Browns Stadium in Cleveland, Ohio. According to WrestleTix, at last count, I don't think this is a final count yet. I don't think I have a final count yet in my inbox, but the most recent count we have, 55,858 tickets distributed is the estimate from WrestleTix. That is higher than last year at Ford Field in Detroit. I was also there because of you. We were seated in the press box, and I could see a scattering of empty seats. They could have put more people in this building, but this is, let's look at the chart. This is, we now have four SummerSlams. Can you believe it's been 4 years, sort of? It's been four SummerSlams since WWE went back on the road following postponement of events during the COVID-19 pandemic, which is still happening, okay? But okay, just over 45,000 for the Las Vegas SummerSlam in 2021, just over 45,000, down to 40,000 in Nashville in 2022, 40,000, up to 51,000, over 51,000 estimated tickets distributed, and up to over 55,000 estimated tickets distributed. No, of course, that doesn't include suites. So, I mean, what did they announce here? 57,791. WrestleTix last estimate 55,858. Could easily see suites making up the difference there. Basically, none of these ticket maps include suites. And what we've seen as the difference between WrestleTix estimated tickets distributed and the announced attendance, it's plausible that that difference is largely attributed to not accounting for suites in the ticket map. Could be a legit number here. Could be a legit number of tickets, I would think, distributed, not a turnstile count. Turnstile counts tend to be lower. I don't think we'll ever be getting a turnstile count, but I think the commission, the Greater Cleveland Sports Commission, I think is a private entity. I believe I looked into this. It is a nonprofit. So I don't know that we're going to be getting any records from this SummerSlam event. But what WWE did get is a lot of sponsors. Wingstop, the presenting sponsor. Straight Talk Wireless, not the Straight Talk Express. No, John McCain is no longer with us. But Straight Talk Wireless, Wheatley American Vodka. There were others. Oh, yes, there were others. There was some video game that I'm too old to understand. There was Mike's Harder Lemonade. I remember when it was just hard lemonade, but there's harder. I don't know. Mike's was there, too. I think there were others that I'm not remember. Oh, God. There was, yes, the official energy drink. Take that, Prime, and your Canvas sponsor. By the way, those Wingstop logos and Straight Talk Wireless logos were on the canvas in the corner. Historic. The first time that there's ever been corner sponsor logos on the canvas, in addition to the center premium space inventory, okay? The Prime logo in the center. But the official energy drink of WWE and of SummerSlam is C4. There was, I did notice, a C4... billboard ad as I was leaving Cleveland. But let's not forget there was a great integration that happened here as Manscaped had its own backstage skit involving Otis, Akira Tozawa. We all expected this, that when he left Dragon Gate, he would eventually go on to make his debut in WWE and spend years in the company, including an ad spot here for Manscaped. I look forward to, I mean, this is a popular podcast sponsor. I mean, just it brings to mind, just think of the integration opportunities that could be actioned around other brands like Blue Chew and things of that nature, which are not sponsoring this podcast. Was this ad saturation? Maybe in a minority of people's view, but I didn't sense that this was more than the typical fan could bear. Oh, I think they could bear a lot more. And this was not Cinnamon Toast Crunch overbranded. This was, a digestible amount. In terms of thinking about what the city or what the sports commission provided, I did spend quite a bit of time around the downtown area in Cleveland, and I only saw these sort of banners on the street signs, street poles. I only saw these around the stadium roadways, so probably on the property of the stadium. Of course, they had these big banners on the stadium itself, but I did not see what I did see in Detroit, for example, where you saw WWE branding, marketing, awareness on buildings, on the train, on the sidewalk. I didn't see any of that. Could have missed it, but I didn't see any of that except for on these roadways around the stadium. How was this event received? And this is not necessarily business, but I want to think about something that ultimately is getting tied to business. How was this event received by the inmates at cagematch.net? 6.79 at the moment. Last year's SummerSlam, it's above last year's SummerSlam a little bit. I heard some of my peers disliked the Drew McIntyre and CM Punk match with all of its explicit storytelling. I don't sense that it was like a match that is going to whatever make these stars less the stars that they are. On Cage Match right now, the match is rated what, a 6.65, I think that is. Yeah. So maybe not blow away great, sure, but serviceable probably. Cody and Solo, a match that was just about entrances and it was boring, supposedly. They had us, those of us who attended the press conference, they moved us to the floor to watch the entire main event standing on the floor, so I guess so we could quickly get to the press conference area. This crowd, which I understand, did not come across that hot at times, at least. This crowd seemed to be pretty hot to me. A lot of strong reactions, of course, to the Roman Reigns pop and everything. And I did think about while the match was going on that maybe there's going to be a Roman Reigns appearance here, and thinking about, you know, the old Nitro turning heads towards the entranceway. But this crowd did seem pretty engaged throughout this match. Maybe that didn't come across on television, but that was my firsthand impression. So I'll say some more stuff. We'll go through some notes about the press conference at the very end here, and we'll turn our attention now to, we'll go over the merchandise report that I put out for subscribers at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. If you want to screenshot this now, an engagement tweet it, now's your opportunity, but you'll have to share the URL as well. Top five. And now we've got the brand itself in here for both WWE and AEW. These two lists, WWE and AEW, these are not comparable, even though there are values. I've hazarded to put values next to them. But that's just how I rank these. What is this, by the way? This is assuming, big leap in assumption here, assuming that the lists on WShop and Shop AEW are, the bestsellers lists are honest, which there's reason to believe that they are, given how well these lists correlate with what WWE and PWTs have published. In any case, CM Punk number one for July 1st to July 31st is my estimate. Jey Uso, the Yeet shirts are still in full force. I would say this pretty well reflects my memory of what I saw in Cleveland. Lots of CM Punk shirts. In fact, at AEW Dynamite in Buffalo a couple months ago, whenever it was, lots of CM Punk shirts there as well. Number one, CM Punk, Jey Uso, Cody Rhodes, WWE the brand. There's no replica belts included in this. And John Cena now, number five, for his whatever his retirement branding is. AEW, again, the AEW brand itself, number one. But okay, we probably, what you're, if you're listening to this, you're probably more interested in who's a draw. So number two, Will Ospreay. Number three, MJF. Number four, the Ring of Honor brand. A lot of DVDs are getting included in this. That's what's helping run this up. Yes, people are unbelievably still buying Blu-ray DVDs here in 2024. And number five, Swerve Strickland. That would reflect my intuition, and in fact, it reflects what I've... Now, this is all systematic, I swear. But this does reflect who I believe should be and are the top three stars in AEW. There's a full top 10 that we're not showing here, but let's look at the top 10 year-to-date. I think it's a top 10, yes. Year-to-date for both of these categories. We go into Pro Wrestling Tees, too, and I should mention, this month on Pro Wrestling Tees, Joe Hendry did very well, which makes sense, right, with the all of the attention he's getting on NXT. So year-to-date, January 1st to July 31st. I'm gonna put an overlay on the screen though, real quick, just in case somebody, I don't know if I want that overlay. Okay, we'll do that overlay. I'll get rid of the logo. Anyway, sorry if you're listening in audio. Okay, so top 10 year to date for WWE. We have CM Punk at number one. He has been there the entire year. He, of course, returned to WWE in late November. What else do we have here? Jey Uso, number two, as he was for the month. Cody Rhodes, Roman Reigns, WWE, Steve Austin, Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt, The Rock, and Rhea Ripley. Perhaps, again, an estimate, perhaps moving the most merchandise here. And on the other side, on AEW, again, these values are not comparable to one another. You cannot look at the WWE values and compare them to the AEW values or vice versa. But the rankings that we're estimating for AEW number one, through all of its AEW branded products, including DVDs, followed by Will Ospreay, Swerve Strickland, Ring of Honor, MJF, Mercedes Moné, Sting, Adam Copeland, Kazuchika Okada, and the artwork of Rob, how do you say this, Schamberger? I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Do I have things to say about this list? This looks intuitive. It looks believable to me that this estimate could be accurate. Sure. And again, do we have here the top three being Will Ospreay, Swerve Strickland, who ranks higher in the year-to-date list than he does in July, followed by MJF, who is probably hindered by the fact that he has been out and without new items being added to him for the first few months of the year. And there's that. We got Adam Copeland now out of action. Sting, of course, retired. And Okada peeking his way up there. Okay. And I have updated this talent analytics, which I would say is kind of in a beta version. Here we have listed year to date: Roman Reigns, number one for WWE, CM Punk, Cody Rhodes, The Rock. This is including, of course, all of the year, including the time leading up to WrestleMania, Seth Rollins, Jey Uso, The Bloodline, Solo Sikoa. This is based on a combination of those estimates about merchandise, quarter hours, and YouTube, based on my own arbitrary conditions, based on how high your segments rank as a percentile. We're looking mainly in the terms of quarter hours at live promos and matches, and YouTube is a bit cleaner because it does actually separate the segments out, and we're looking at that in terms of a percentile, or if you were number one or number two for that week on that program. For AEW, we have MJF, Will Ospreay, Jon Moxley, where's he been? Swerve Strickland, Undisputed Kingdom, Adam Page, Adam Copeland, and Jay White. So there's that. And we move to something else entirely. We'll look at the entire companies for first TV ratings. And big picture, as it continues to be, is WWE has spent most of this year to date with the demo is up. These last 2 months, June and July for SmackDown, are the exception, where Raw has been flat, but mostly up in the demo. In terms of total viewership, the story is less positive, and you've got Raw down in every month in terms of total viewership from the prior year's same month. But NXT is having its very first signs of plateauing here, where it was down in July 7%. That is with the sci-fi preemption excluded. And AEW, now you can say, well, there's some cord-cutting adjustment perhaps we should make here, there, that might offset some of these modestly negative year-over-year comparisons. Contrast that with the more negative year-over-year comparisons for every AEW show we have here. Most importantly, Dynamite, the most watched show by far among the three AEW shows. In July, down 19% in total viewership, down 23% in 18 to 49 viewership. Certainly, these are deeper negative comparisons than the dreaded excuse that, well, it's just because of cord cutting. Cord cutting might give you a 9% adjustment, something like that, 9%. Here we have July, down 19% in total viewership, 23% in the demo. This does not include the Juneteenth episode, which didn't have the Big Bang Theory lead-in, took place on a holiday. That was in June. We're looking at July, including the, was it July 31st, this past week's, yes, on the last day of the month, where AEW Dynamite did its second lowest rating non-preemption ever. And Rampage, maybe flattening out in the demo. Rampage has sort of took a big drop off from its original, you know, first year or so when it was only the second show that AEW had. Now settling into being a third show. It's been about a year since Collision has been around and sort of taking the place of a program that's, you know, the B show or whatever. And Collision, of course, is down greatly from the CM Punk days of a year ago, which were almost a year from All In of last year when the incident that resulted in CM Punk's firing took place. So there's all that. Big picture, AEW's TV ratings continue to be down. Worse than the degree of cord cutting, except for maybe Rampage. Maybe Rampage is flattening out. And certainly Collision is adjusting to a different condition, a different set of circumstances, as opposed to last year. And its ratings are significantly down from a year ago. And Dynamite is significantly down, worse than the rate of cord cutting. Going against the Olympics, but worse than the rate of cord cutting. And WWE, its audience is probably getting younger as the demo has, certainly for NXT has increased, but even for Raw is up 8% in the demo versus last year. These are positive signs. Less so for SmackDown. If we look at here's, we'll just run quickly through. If you're watching in video, we'll run quickly through the year-over-year charts here just for the demo, which I think is more meaningful as P2 Plus total viewership is looking disproportionately at older viewers, as the traditional medium of television is an older medium. And we see in almost every week of the year to date, with the exception of 1, 2, 3, 4 weeks, with the exception of 4 weeks year to date out of the, what, almost 30 weeks that we've had here, or whatever it is, year to date, all these comparisons for Dynamite, except for four, are negative. Most of them negative by double digits, by 10 or worse. Collision, greatly down from its elevated beginnings as a program. Rampage, it's a mixed bag as it's leveling out here. Raw, remarkably similar to a year ago. SmackDown, pretty similar to a year ago. And NXT, almost every episode, with the exception of the most two, you know, the two most recent non-preemptions, every single episode except for the two most recent, better than a year ago. Maybe there's this one here that's almost equal, but it is slightly below back in March. Okay, so TV ratings still look pretty good for WWE, not so good for AEW. Still, Dynamite's ranking highly, we should caveat, which is the biggest rating metric to consider when we're thinking about the TV deal. Fan popularity, a different story. Okay, we can forget about cord cutting and just look at attendance and say, all right, what's attendance looking like for these companies? Data courtesy of WrestleTix, estimated tickets distributed. House shows, no house shows in July. At least no house, I think there were Mexico house shows that we don't have data for. No house shows that we have data for in July for WWE. Last month, the average was down to 4,300. Okay. But they're doing more Raw and SmackDown shows than they are house shows now, which you could not say at many other points in WWE's history. Raw was down in average attendance and average tickets distributed, 9,700, down 16% from last year. SmackDown, 12,000, up 5% from last year. And we'll look at market to market in a second. But AEW, in July, Collision, down 65%. Of course, that's with this run of Collision shows that they're doing, which started midway through the month, I believe. Dynamite, down 22%. That's probably the more meaningful data point there. You've got Dynamite, 4,200 average, down 22%. But let's look at what's more meaningful than just looking at averages. What's your average attendance? Because you know what? Here's the excuse that I can obfuscate. Well, these are averages, but you're comparing, like, you know, if you're looking at this by month, you're comparing a bundle of four shows that were in four markets, and you're comparing them against the July of the year prior that were in four different markets. That's not fair. This data doesn't matter. What you need to do is look at the given show in the given city and compare it to the last time that same event took. Not a house show to a Raw, not a Collision to a Dynamite, a Raw to a Raw, a SmackDown to a SmackDown, a Dynamite to a Dynamite, and we don't really have Collision to Collision comparisons, with the exception of these consecutive Arlington shows, because Collision is a new program. But okay, and we look at Raw in, let's just go in reverse chronological order here, and look at St. Paul, Minnesota. Raw, up 68%. Raw, Green Bay. Last time Raw was there, this show was up 13%. SmackDown in Omaha, up 38%. Worcester, Massachusetts, SmackDown, up 49%. Ottawa, Raw, flat. Toronto, SmackDown, this was before Money in the Bank, up 19%. Raw in Boston, down 4%. You could say that's close to flat. SmackDown in Madison Square Garden, 17,843. That's up 31% compared to the last SmackDown in MSG. Now we're getting into June. That was a June data point. And then we have some comparisons to make here when it comes to AEW. I'll skip over the Collision Arlington comparisons because these are consecutive shows here. But comparing the Nashville Dynamite to the last time they did Dynamite in Nashville, it was up 8%. Comparing the Chicago Dynamite to the last time they did Dynamite in Chicago, was up 4% with 5,291. Towards the end of the month in Buffalo, they did over 4,100, down 26%. And those are the limit of the mark-to-mark comparisons we can make. I think we can take all those things into account. Yes, I think to an extent we can take those averages into account and say, here we have a positive picture for WWE's live event business, which is reflective of consumer behavior, which is reflective of fan interest, fan popularity, whatever you want to call it. That's another positive story for WWE. And here we have another, maybe we're flattening out here, market story. Those averages, though, that we're seeing, not that encouraging for Dynamite, or really for Collision, which is, you know, which is complicated by the two Arlington shows here in July. Mostly positive story for WWE. Mostly negative story. Mixed story at best for AEW. Fightful's reporting that we're out of the exclusive negotiating window for WWE. Or I'm sorry, for AEW. We have new docket entries in the WWE, in the Grant VWE case. They are sealed, though. So I won't get into those right now. I digress. In terms of WWE's TV, AEW's, excuse me, TV deal, they are now reportedly out of the exclusive negotiating window. They can now talk to whomever they want to. WBD is not the only partner they could talk to. They could talk to whoever will talk to them. I continue to think Fox, Amazon, the most plausible partners, I guess the former Viacom, Paramount, maybe. That company is going through a lot of changes. You know, it has been acquired, so I don't really see Paramount as a real home, although they do have television networks, they do have cable networks. But I think the picture that we've gone through just now, and the picture that I go through in the last, at least I did this last month, and I plan to do it, you know, going forward, where we sort of say, okay, the month just ended, let's look at what all of the data tells us about the state of popularity of these companies. And I think there is good reason to be pessimistic about AEW ever being more popular, much more popular than it is now. I think there's good reason to believe that they will get a good TV deal. They may become profitable because of it. Why? Because Dynamite continues to be highly ranked. Rampage and Collision continue to perform in their time slots better than replacement programming to the tune of movie reruns, or even the Big Bang Theory continues to do better than whatever reruns you would put in its place. So it has some value. Dynamite has a lot of value because it continues to be highly ranked, even though its ratings are on the decline. And I think we need to take a moment to reflect on how the business has changed in the last 2 years, primarily due to the multiple resignations of Vince McMahon, who is now in every official capacity, with the exception of a significant number of shares that he owns, is removed from WWE. The AEW opportunity, when it was launched in 2019, in my opinion, was largely contingent. It was contingent on a lot of things, but it was largely contingent on WWE's weakness in its content, which has vanished, which was due to Vince McMahon and the weakness in WWE's content, with the exception of some people who really hate WWE still and prefer AEW strongly. That's a minority of people. I don't know if you'll ever win those people over WWE, but there's a contingent of people who have a great disdain for WWE. I don't know how significant those numbers are in terms of those people, but AEW's opportunity was contingent on a weak WWE that was disgruntling fans, that was disenfranchising talent, and you were offering that those fans and that talent a better place to be. And what we have now is an AEW that is contrasted against the WWE that is far more favorably received by wrestling fans, that has basically no identity that differentiates it from WWE. I think Tony Khan would answer that he has the best wrestlers in the world, the best matches in the world, which is a completely subjective argument that you can make and raise, but it's a subjective argument. And I don't know what the objective differences are when it comes to WWE and AEW. There may be some small differences, like there are skits in the back that are not quite skits. They kind of set up a reason for them for happening. But there aren't huge differences to me between the brands to make a viewer want to watch AEW and get something from it that they're not getting from WWE. Again, with the exception of some really hardcore AEW exclusive fans who have a disdain still for AEW, for WWE. I think AEW has no creative values that are really their own. It has not that many points of differentiation, which I think is evident from if you get offline for a second and you go to, especially not a pay-per-view event, but a TV event, and you walk around, I think you'll see a lot of WWE shirts. And I think that tells me that these are wrestling fans, that there isn't this distinction between WWE fans and AEW fans like there is in the medium that throws everybody together to be on a side and to fight. But if you go to, you know, I think if, you know, I know Tony Khan is at all the shows and he comes out between taping segments and he greets the crowd. But if he would walk through the half filled arenas and see, the fans with, the CM Punk shirts and the WWE shirts, I get a sense that these are people who are watching both products. And those people do, apparently, by virtue of attending the event. It's worthwhile enough for them to go through the inconvenience and spend the money to go to the show. But I don't see what the differentiation points are enough. And I think the difference is now that we've seen since July 2022, since Vince McMahon's first resignation, since he has become as removed as ever from WWE's creative, since WWE has therefore become more favorably viewed by fans, probably morale has improved a great deal as well among talent, maybe staff, that WWE is satisfying fan desires and is becoming, is widening the margin between themselves and AEW, and the major league is becoming more so the major league. And I think to contrast against that, you have, well, we have another story this week coming that Britt Baker and MJF had some sort of conflict, which points to another case of continued problems with managing talent. Maybe AEW has an opportunity in this next TV deal to widen its distribution. Maybe there's a reason there to be less, I want to say pessimistic, but be less optimistic about the notion that you're going to be anything other than at the level of fan popularity that you're at. Maybe there's an opportunity to get on a powerful streaming platform. Amazon Prime Video would be the most plausible one to widen the availability of AEW. Max streaming platform seems more likely that there'll be some sort of presence of AEW on a streaming service like Max that will certainly reach more viewers than just being on TNT and TBS alone, especially as the coverage of those networks continues to decline under the rate of, you know, 70 million homes. That's going to continue to decline and continue to decline for the foreseeable future. And I don't know if Max is going to get up above, you know, well above 30 million subscribers, but it'll at least be in more unique homes. Is there a huge opportunity there that's going to transform the level of popularity of this brand? I highly doubt it. Does that make an incremental difference for this company? Yes, it can. Is that going to make AEW a dramatically more popular company, though, because it is in 10 to 20 million additional homes? Not the content does not compel people to watch it. And I think we have seen over the years distribution make an incremental difference in popularity or change the direction of popularity in WWE's case. And I would argue in recent history, that's 2014 when the W Network was launched and a number of, probably not TV ratings, but a number of consumer metrics, including ticket sales and merchandise sales, increased 2014, 15, 16, and then reversed course after the W Network was around for a few years. Maybe people got their fill of it. The product continued to have the weaknesses that it had, and popularity in those metrics declined. And I think WWE, like AEW, like what I would say is virtually every wrestling company, I've had conversations with people where, where it's argued that leadership is overrated and that leaders get too much of the credit and too much of the blame. And that is not my view. I think leadership, if anything, is underrated. And the evidence that I would point to is the removal of Vince McMahon. And I think you can go through history. We will not make these cases right now, but I think you can go through history and look at WCW and its revolving door of leaders and the demise that that company met due to weaknesses in leadership. You can look at some of the weaknesses and problems that TNA has had throughout its history and consider the leadership that was in charge at those times. And at this moment, WWE has apparently, you know, leadership that is effective and is supporting morale and is monetizing WWE very efficiently, as we'll hear from Mark Shapiro on Thursday, I'm sure. but I think these are two thoughts that are hard to keep in your brain at the same time. But AEW's popularity is going to be what it is right now, I think, for the foreseeable future. It's hard for me to imagine it being that much different. But they will also probably get a good TV deal that will probably make them profitable. Which is not all that dissimilar from the phenomenon that WWE has been through from, you know, their 2014 TV deal, their 2018 TV deal. Big increases they got. In 2014, not the increase that they thought they were going to get, but it's still a 70% increase, despite, well, declines in popularity over the years. Still got a big increase. You know why? Because they're, at least one of their TV programs, well, two of their TV programs, were really highly ranked. Dynamite is really highly ranked. Not as highly viewed as Raw or SmackDown. Not by half. Maybe about half. But as long as Dynamite continues to be one of the most watched programs, especially in the demo on Wednesday night, it's going to be a really valuable program. So we'll see. You know, Tony Khan will look foolish if they do not get a huge, huge, at least a good increase, because he has been so confident, expressed such confidence in such an increase. But if you're waiting around for AEW to close the margin between themselves and WWE, you might be waiting around forever.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right. Now that I've made AEW fans mad, maybe. Some notes from the Paul Levesque portion of the SummerSlam press conference, at least those that were on my beat of the wrestling business. Paul Levesque said that there were records set. Presumably he was speaking to SummerSlam specific records, records in gate sponsorship. Oh, we could tell merchandise sales at the venue and social media gate. What does that mean? W did announce in a press release that the gate last year for SummerSlam was $8.5 million. There's been no press release that we sometimes get where they say, oh, this was the most successful event of this kind ever. Maybe tomorrow. Who knows? They did not announce a location for next year's SummerSlam. I expect that to be New Jersey, New York, perhaps MetLife Stadium when they announce it. I think that they are not. I think that they are basically all done announcing gate numbers as they did for a brief time, because the UFC numbers are so much higher because ticket prices for UFC are so high, especially that Sphere show. If you've looked at that, that UFC is doing, no mention of the viewership being the highest viewership for SummerSlam. Maybe that's reflective of Peacock subscribers starting to flatten out. I very much believe that this was an event with higher attendance than the recent SummerSlams, which we just looked at earlier. And the ticket prices were probably higher, although I have not looked into it. Stephanie McMahon was seen at ringside. She was shown on screen applauding in the front row. As soon as the camera was off her, she was whisked away to the back. But she was there. Paul Levesque had some cryptic comments saying she loves this. I'm quoting now because I went back and I wrote down exactly what he said. So I want to get his words right. Quote, she loves this. Sometimes it's harder to love it. Sometimes it's easier to love it. It's easy to love it again for her, end quote. Cryptic comments. He did not expand further into why it would be harder to love the wrestling business at sometimes and easier at others, beyond the normal challenges of day to day living and breathing the wrestling business. But you could read it as maybe alluding to the difficulties perhaps, were had between maybe, Vince and Stephanie, as Stephanie on May 19th, 2022 announced her temporary leave of absence for no reason at all, except for she wanted some time off, supposedly. But then we found out later that the board was already looking into allegations of sexual misconduct involving Vince McMahon after Vince stepped down on an interim basis. She stepped in as CEO. She became co-CEO after his permanent resignation, the first one. And then when he forced his way back into the company, she immediately resigned. So maybe he's referring to, maybe there were, we don't know. We don't know if there were issues or, you know, conflicts between Vince McMahon and Stephanie McMahon, but that could be what he's referring to. He said he expects you'll see her around more. And Sean Ross Sapp did ask if she had any official role. That's what this response, what these comments were stemming from here. Sean Ross Sapp asked Paul Levesque if Stephanie has any official role. He said that she has no official role with WWE currently, but that she will be around. When it comes to two nights of WrestleMania, of SummerSlam, he did say, I think so, with a question mark at the end, when it came to saying whether this was the last one night SummerSlam that we'll see. So we, as we know, we have a two night SummerSlam coming up in Minnesota in 2026. I expect a two night SummerSlam, next year again, probably in New Jersey / New York, probably in East Rutherford. That's not been announced or confirmed, but that's what I expect. On, TNA and, international wrestling partners, he used the open for business line. He mentioned how it allows having these relationships with TNA, and he mentioned the international partners. He didn't mention them by name, but clearly he's referring to Pro Wrestling Noah, referring to Marigold. He says it allows WWE talent to get more experience, and I think you'll see more of that. Something I don't think you see on screen if you were watching the press conference is they have in the past. I remember at Royal Rumble in the Tampa area, I was astonished to see what I thought were more media people coming into the room who had like full Hulk Hogan cosplay on and stuff. This was Royal Rumble, but people were brought into the room who had like replica belts and merch and stuff. These were not, as it turned out, media members, but I believe they were ticket holders of the VIP. Where's our image here of the on location, maybe priority pass holders for the VIP experience, where I guess you get, I'm sure you get access to things that a typical fan would not. I'm sure you pay heavily for it. What else? Let's go to Bill Apter was there, and he had a brief interaction with Paul Levesque about John Cena, but I'll just play an early good-natured moment of that conversation, that interaction.
Yes, good to see you.
Yes, same.
And this is wonderful because in the quote-unquote territory days, we never had this. You know, we had to sneak around to find out what people are
thinking. I don't
know.
I feel like the journalism was the same thing. PWI, you guys just made up stories, right?
No, that's a long story. We'll have a discussion about it.
I guess Paul Levesque could not help himself, but to refer to, you know, wrestling media, you know, and I think he was making a funny and what he probably thought is a good natured comment. But not one meant in irony, I think. Especially if you compare it to his comment that he made to Lucas Charpia in France about referring to PW Insider and Fightful as sources that were not credible. And I can't speak for everybody, but maybe Paul Levesque is just not reading the right outlets, because there's a lot of things that are reported in wrestling media that are not made up, vast majority of it, in fact, but especially, the Grant v. WB et al. Lawsuit. It's not made up that that's a lawsuit. You can read it and decide for yourself whether or not, her story is truthful. You can read parts of what we have, parts of Vince McMahon's side of the story, basically just a denial though. And pointing out some things, what his claims are about Janelle Grant's life. You can decide for yourself whether or not that's made up or truthful. We have what we reported last week. We have emails from members of the LVCVA, the Las Vegas organization that's bringing WrestleMania to Las Vegas, pointing out that they paid $300,000 for SummerSlam 2 years ago. That's not made up. We have them saying that they're going to grant WrestleMania, they're going to grant WWE $5 million in a cash grant. That's in emails via public records requests. That's not made up. We have this note that on July 17th, 2023, federal law enforcement agents executed a search warrant and served a federal grand jury subpoena on Vince McMahon. No charges have been brought in these investigations. WWE has received voluntary and compulsory legal demands for documents, including the federal law enforcement including from federal law enforcement and regulatory agencies concerning the investigation and related subject matters. That's not made up. Who's that from? That's from W itself. That's not a made up story. So I would say that, and by the way, so there were some questions here, from Denise Salcedo about the wrestling partners. That question is one question that I was on the top of my list to ask. After that was asked, my next question was the question that Sean Ross Sapp asked about whether Stephanie has any official role in WWE. There are other legitimate questions to ask. Maybe somebody could have asked about, you know, Logan Paul's comments about the female boxer in the Olympics, and whether WWE had any response to that, whether WWE had any interaction with him following that comment, whether there's any limit or how WWE deals with situations when their talent comment on things that are controversial. That question was not asked. As John Pollock has said on their review of SummerSlam, he was not given access to the press conference. He was given access to the press box. I was given access to the press conference. My hand was up every time Paul Levesque stopped speaking. I was not called on. And I know there are some fans who I think, you know, don't want challenging questions asked. Maybe WWE doesn't want challenging questions asked. I think there are a lot of fans who, to address the weakest points first, who don't have a vested interest in the well-being of the wrestling industry, but who only have an interest in their own entertainment and an assurance that they do not have to feel bad about their choice of entertainment, which is not to say that anyone needs to or should feel bad about being a WWE fan, but that a lot of people we hear from directly, mostly anonymously, they don't want to have to consider that. And they honestly feel the need to bullshit themselves in order to preempt having to consider that rather than discussing difficult issues. But I think it the fact that John was not allowed access to the press conference, I can only suspect that it was for fear that he would ask a challenging question. I was not called on. I have been called on at every press conference for WWE that I have attended, except for the second night of WrestleMania. And maybe you say, well, we let him get one question. And I understand there are a lot of people there. But it is conspicuous that I've been called on at every, let's say, event that I've attended and been at the press conference for. And I think there are people who were allowed access to the press conference whose work is not as serious as some of the work that we've done. And maybe it's assumed that, well, it'll be safer to have this group of people in rather than people who will ask challenging questions. And I think it looks bad on WWE's part when we have this past week, just days before SummerSlam, that both of us were referred to as people who you see frequently at press conferences in Chris LaGentle's interview with Richard Deitch. Chris LaGentle is an executive vice president, head of communications, and executive vice president of talent relations now. And here's that clip from Thursday. This was released.
So while I think by and large WWE, probably in terms of the communication department, I think it's much more sort of positive than negative stuff. There are times, obviously, when you have reporters calling in or reporting stories that are certainly not good for the company. How would you assess how forthcoming the WWE has been when it comes to Vince McMahon and the lawsuits that have been out there?
I would say that related to active legal situations, there's clearly a limit on what we were able to say. But that said, as that investigation has gone on over time, we've been compliant all the way along and all the way through. And when we have the opportunity to answer questions, we do. And when there's not that opportunity, we don't. And the media, we've found, have understood that because they realize that sometimes there's a lane we can take and other times there's not. But we agree that Brandon and John do good work. And, you know, you see them as regulars at our shows, at our press conferences, and they're doing their jobs as reporters and we're doing our job as the company.
And I'll say first that I think there is an element of honesty and good faith to that, that I think there are at least some people in WWE who do genuinely believe that John and I do good work, even though it is not work that they necessarily want published. They understand that we have a job to do, and that includes my belief, I can say at least that we have a responsibility to report certain things and to pursue certain stories rather than not pursue them, including uncovering the names of who Janelle Grant is referring to when it comes to those four anonymized corporate officers who we now know are Nick Khan, Stephanie McMahon, Brian Nurse, and Brad Blum. I think that there are probably a lot of people in WWE who have different opinions. Paul Levesque clearly maybe on one end of not viewing the wrestling media fairly favorably. Maybe there are others who see the value in the work that we do. I think there's also, more than anything, a desire from WWE to have the appearance that they are willing to be transparent about, as LaGentle says there, about what they can talk about legally and what they can't talk about legally. I think there is a willingness to, and that's probably played into why I have been allowed to ask questions that few people are asking. It gives the appearance, whether or not Paul Levesque is prepared to respond well, gives the appearance that they are not shying away from difficult topics and controversies and, you know, things that are essentially bad press for them. Maybe they felt that we were going to ask, you know, challenging questions about something related to legal stories surrounding Vince. Legal stories, by the way, that they've published in their own filings here, that they're cooperating with the investigation. Comments that Nick Khan has made on an earnings call that they are cooperating with the investigation, that certain subpoenas and search warrants have been executed. Just asking for an update if that's still the case, if they're still cooperating. Maybe they were worried that we would ask about, I don't know, about Logan Paul or something. We would ask about you know, the federal investigation into sexual misconduct allegations. But I think, you know, when it comes to whether or not this leadership team deserves the benefit of the doubt, on one hand, this is not Vince McMahon anymore. Vince McMahon was overseeing Nick and Paul. It was not the other way around. However, this company has been through what it's been through. And Nick Khan worked in WWE with Vince McMahon for a year and a half. You learned about the culture and about Vince, whatever you learned at that point. Paul Levesque worked with Vince McMahon since 1995 and learned all that he learned in that time, good and bad, and about the culture of WWE. And through whatever personal relationship he has with Vince McMahon as his father-in-law. After Vince made his return to the company, Nick Khan went on to Bill Simmons' podcast and did what I would describe as vigorously defending Vince McMahon and sort of downplaying that it was, you know, a big deal or a bad story that he was coming back. And Paul and Nick were members of the board of directors in December when the board unanimously agreed that Vince shouldn't come back in December of 2022. When some members resigned after he forced his way back into the company, they did not resign, and they approved of him being the executive chairman because he was unanimously approved as the executive chairman. We have basically no insight into why that was the case. John Alba did ask Paul Levesque why that was the case, and he said he wanted to focus on the positive. They were members of the board of directors, and they oversaw the investigation, or they were certainly members of the board of the board of directors when the board was investigating allegations of misconduct and investigating W's culture. And yet they approved of Vince McMahon being the executive chairman when he made his return to the company in 2023. For those reasons, do they deserve the benefit of the doubt when it comes to issues of sexual misconduct? No. That this company has been through what it's been through, and that they were members of the board, and that they are privy to what they should be privy to is a lot of information about what's going on with the culture. No, they are the leaders of this company, and this company has a track record of misconduct. Whether or not, clearly, nobody's accusing them of being involved in misconduct or even having knowledge of sexual assault. But they're leading a company that clearly at least has had in the very recent past a very troubling history with sexual misconduct in the workplace. And for that reason, this company doesn't get the benefit of the doubt. And for the tribal warriors out there, neither should AW get the benefit of the doubt, because this is clearly not just a company problem, but this is a industry culture problem that evidently goes well beyond WWE. We can just point to all the stories that flowed from speaking out in 2020 as one large set of examples of that. I think, again, that W wants the appearance of transparency. Maybe some part of them genuinely wants transparency, but clearly what we learned here is that they are protective. You know, we've learned nothing surprising, that they are protective of their own interests, first of all, and appearances are the most important thing. And perhaps we'll talk about this more on Thursday when we have a special time of Paul and Thurston Thursday instead of Wednesday. Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern, and we'll be covering the TKO earnings call, earnings report, all that we may learn from probably mostly Mark Shapiro. I expect we'll be speaking. Maybe we'll hear Ari Emanuel in canned form once again. I'm excited to learn about all the efficient ways they're monetizing their media rights. And I'm sure he's going to be excited about the NBA rights and how that shows that just how valuable sports rights are. Everybody's been talking about how the sports rights bubble is going to burst, but it has not burst, as evident from the great deal the NBA made. Maybe we'll learn that and more. That will be on Thursday instead of Wednesday at 3 p.m. And this is WrestleNomics Radio. It's free. The first episode of every month is free here. And if you want to sign up and listen to it next week, it's patreon.com/WrestleNomics. You get access to not only this podcast every week, but the TV ratings analysis, TV ratings reports. Sometimes I'm breaking TV ratings news if I'm the first one that has it. These monthly reports that are still yet to come out, in addition to the merchandise report that we already put out, that is already out, but we'll have updates on live event attendance, the market-to-market breakdown. You get access to the podcast slides that we're going through, PowerPoint slides. What could be more exciting than that? And if you want to subscribe to the data subscriber tier, you get access to the TV ratings spreadsheet, the quarter hour spreadsheet, the YouTube data spreadsheet that I have. That's there for the $10 subscribers, the standard tier, just $5 a month. So that's all for this week. Thanks to everybody who does support through Patreon and through the various free platforms that we have and allow me to travel to events like SummerSlam and cover them. So thanks everybody for listening, supporting. Talk to you next time.
Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.